Welcome back to From the Ground Up with Mark Weller. I'm Matt Rienzo, here with real estate entrepreneur and self-proclaimed honey badger, Mark Weller. Hey, Mark, how you doing?
I'm good, thank you, Matt. I'm good, very good, thank you.
Should we tell everyone why we love the honey badger and why we associate with that animal?
Of course. I mean, I think it's obvious. It just never quits. It never gives up. And it just keeps going, and it keeps working through the various issues in its life, very similar to being a developer in the construction industry.
The honey badger just doesn't care. That's the mantra.
To be an entrepreneur, and particularly to be an entrepreneur in many of these businesses that are generally problem-based, solution-based and problem-solving businesses, you need to be a honey badger. So yeah, that's the reason why.
Honey badger, rhinoceros, whatever it is.
He doesn't care. Yeah. He just don't care.
That's great. All right, well, let's jump in. We're really excited about today's guest. Nina Grondin is managing partner and co-founder at Curioso. She's leading the team doing interior design work for Branded Residential and for the resort for our Six Senses project in Grand Bahama. So let's bring Nina on.
Hey, Nina, how are you? How are you doing today?
Hi, Mark. Great. Really nice to be here. Thanks for having me.
No, it's great to have you. You know, I want to thank you very much for coming on today, but I want to start with a really general question about your business and about your company. And I want you to tell our audience about your firm and what excites you guys, what you and your team and the men and women at your company are good at, and tell us a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I lead a company called Curioso, founded about 10 years ago with my business partner, Dan Pierce. We started in Chicago, just the two of us, and now 10 years later, we are 35 people strong. Our studios are in Chicago and Merida, Mexico, and we've really built a multidisciplinary team of really passionate designers, diverse backgrounds. We really value a collective approach. And we started the company because we just had a desire to work side by side with owners and brands and developers who are, you know, curious about what they could potentially create about the built environment and really value the design process of how design in a problem-solving way, as you've mentioned, can create something really memorable and unique for humans.
So just tell me about the name Curioso. I love the name. Yeah. I think it's really catchy. And how did you come up with the name?
Yeah, it's really about curiosity. And we think that people who are led by curiosity just tend to be more innovative and be more creative, right? Like asking questions, understanding possibilities, not walking into a situation thinking you already know the answer. And so it describes us for sure as people, it describes the members of our team, and it also describes the type of people that we like to work with.
I love it. I think that's so appropriate and so cool. And it's great. It's a great name, and I love what it represents.
Yeah. And I love, you know, just reading off your website, you know, creating memorable and meaningful experiences with the power to transform. I think that's one of the things that resonates with me is your ability to take an interior, a building, a room or whatever, a home, and transform it into something that's really special.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if you think about design, especially hospitality, hotels, restaurants, these environments tend to be really meaningful for people, right? Like they're where you might go on a first date, they're where you might have your wedding, an anniversary, a family vacation that becomes completely unforgettable. And the feel of these spaces has the ability to impact that, right? Like even just the lighting level at the table for your restaurant, that might impact how your first date goes and potentially impact the rest of someone's life. And these are all design decisions, but they really drive at the human emotion and the experience that the people who are in these spaces get to have.
Everything matters. I think that's what you're saying. Mm-hmm. Every detail, right?
Yep. Everything matters.
No doubt. No doubt. And you mentioned a couple of your office locations in Chicago, excuse me, and in Merida, Mexico. I got to start out with Chicago. I love Chicago. It's one of my favorite cities. I actually got engaged in Chicago, and it's just a great city. You're very involved in Chicago, the development there, the culture. Just tell us about some of the things that you're working on in Chicago, you know, as a real estate professional, an entrepreneur, a designer, you know, all the things that you work on. Tell us about that in Chicago.
Yeah, absolutely. Matt, if I could like reach through the Zoom and give you a big hug right now. You don't often hear about people talking about how much they love the city of Chicago, and that's one of the reasons why I'm so involved in it.
Well, they must not have been there then, because it's pretty
exactly.
awesome.
Exactly. That's the thing, is that I think Chicago is one of the best cities in the United States, hands down. And I know people from New York and LA and will dispute that, but Chicago has everything a major city needs to offer. We have an incredible food scene, arts and culture. It's incredibly affordable for a major city. We have probably the best Lyft in the country, direct flights anywhere in the US for, you know, in less than 3 hours or 3.5 hours. And I joined a couple of boards within the city of Chicago. One is the MPEA, which is the Metropolitan Peer and Exposition Authority. So we govern McCormick Place, which is the largest convention center in North America, as well as Navy Pier. And the reason why I joined that board is I actually really dislike going to both of those places. Mm-hmm.
That pier is incredible too, isn't it?
Yes, location-wise, it is incredible. Yes. In terms of what it has to offer from a hospitality perspective,
that's right.
It's really been lacking. And for the millions of people who come to an event or a convention in the city of Chicago, or who might go to Navy Pier, it doesn't really represent our city in the way that we know how awesome Chicago can be. So those boards are full of, you know, lawyers and politicals and lobbyists and union reps. And I'm like kind of the hospitality voice within those boards. And I tend to be a disruptor and just say like, hey, why can't we do it this way? Or why do we have Panda Express instead of Mott Street, right? Like something Chicago born. Why do we have Starbucks instead of Intelligentsia? Why don't we celebrate our city in every single way that we can, so that when people come to visit, they really get a taste of who we are?
Yeah, it's right. I think that's the truth about a lot of cities though, isn't it? You can go to these incredible iconic locations in Boston, New York, Baltimore is another example right up the road from here where we worked for many years, and DC, and a lot of them are filled with not the best representation of what the city's all about.
Yeah,
it's interesting the way that works.
Yeah, and you mentioned, you know, the Metropolitan Peer and Exposition Authority. You're also very involved in Choose Chicago and the Hospitality Diversity Action Council and Radical Innovation. Why is it? I mean, you explained why you're involved with those projects because you want to help see them be something better. But why so much civic engagement in the city in general?
I love the city so much, and I really want people to understand what Chicago has to offer and, you know, visit the city and be involved. And I think the city can do better by working together. So Choose Chicago, for instance, it's the marketing arm for the city. And I think you guys know Baltimore well, right? Like Baltimore and Chicago are kind of similar, that they kind of just have like a bad narrative. They just have like a negative reputation for people who don't know it. Chicago is known as being crime-ridden, cold, and corrupt. It's a flyover city. How many, like, people call it second city. We talk about the third coast, right? Like, it's kind of just always secondary in people's minds. But when you come and you see it and you experience it, you realize how incredible of a city it really is. It's clean. It's the access to water, the public maintenance of the beachfront and the riverfront, like all of that is so important and vital to a great public life within a community. And Chicago really offers that. So I'm also really interested in just helping to reshape the narrative of the city of Chicago so that people understand how amazing this place is.
Yeah, I feel the same way about Chicago. I think Chicago is amazing. I never thought of it in the light, in the way you've put it. As a secondary city that has as many problems. I do understand there's crime problems, and there are in a lot of cities right now, quite frankly. Mm-hmm. And but there are so many good things. I was a little personal story. Last year I was able to chaperone my son at Lollapalooza for 4 days. So I only went to the concert for one day and one night, maybe it was two nights and one day. And the rest of the time I rented one of the electric bikes and just rode or one of the, not the electric bikes, I'm sorry, one of the regular rental bikes. And I just rode up and down, up and down. And I went all over the city, all over the park system and the path system, Then I rented a boat, went out with a guy, took me out of the boat all the way out in the lake where the where the water goes into that reservoir type system, feeds into the system. And it was just an epic few days. The weather was perfect too. I was really amazed at how I felt, just like you described, how sort of organized the community activity is allowed to be in such a large waterfront area, because it's very well taken care of. So for example, there's that area where all the boats pull up and there's all these people playing music and having a good time. There's people hanging out on the shore at the same time. And this kind of goes on for miles. So I just found that the whole city, having that 3 days to myself to ride a bike up and down, and so on, was really, really exciting. And like I said, the food was great. Food's incredible. So.
Well, it sounds like we have Nina to partially thank for some of those wonderful things that you experienced on the tourism side. Yeah. So let's travel 2,000 miles to the south to Merida, Mexico. why do you have an office there? Tell us about the relationship between the two offices and how that works.
Yeah. Well, a couple of reasons why we have an office there. Really, we started an office there as a result of a large resort project that we were working on in just south of Merida, close to Cancun on the coast of the Yucatan. And my business partner, Dan, his background in hospitality actually stems from being in Mexico. He cut his teeth building or designing hotel projects in the Yucatan. He worked in Mexico City, and kind of like full circle 20 years later, we had this opportunity to design a hotel there because of his experience. And so when you're working on a large hotel project outside of the US, in order to really make sure that that project can get off the ground, be built with quality, be have the attention and care that you need, you've got to have boots on the ground. And so
we certainly understand that.
Exactly.
The Yucatan's amazing though. I was there. I attended a party last year there. For 3 days, a birthday party. And it was just incredible. It was so beautiful. It was actually in the jungle.
It's awesome because it's got historical colonial roots paired with Mayan roots.
Yes.
And so it feels very, just really soulful. And so we chose Merida because it is the capital of the Yucatan. It's a city of 1 million people. It's got a great commercial center, great architectural, program at their university. And so there's incredible talent that is coming from the university there. And then, you know, these passionate designers, they want to work on US projects. They want to work on projects within their home country and hometown. And so we were able to establish a studio and really hire a team of fantastic designers who, you know, are able to be in Mexico, bilingual, understand how things are built and made in Mexico, and then be able to fold them into our overall studio and work on all of our projects, both in the US and in Mexico and in the Caribbean.
That's really cool.
Can you bring the Mayan sweat lodge?
the Temescals?
Oh my gosh.
Did you do that, Mark?
So cool.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a spiritual.
Is it like a 5-hour thing or an all-day thing?
It's about two, just over 2 hours.
Okay.
Yeah, but it's
the short version.
it's pretty awesome though.
I would pass out
if I had to do that. Yeah, it was a lot of fun. The musical part is the best. You get to sort of, you know, play the maracas and pound a small drum all inside complete darkness in 130 degree heat.
Oh, it sounds like a claustrophobic nightmare for me.
No, man. Just take a deep breath and chill out. It was incredible. So there's so many cool spiritual things to do, you know, that come out of the Mayan and come out of Mexico. So I'm sure you all have, or you're bringing a lot of those interesting ideas and things to do to, you know, over to the United States, up to the United States from Mexico.
Yeah, it's really cool.
Yeah, totally.
So, you know, just talking about a little bit about yourself, you know, this is a two-part question, but, you know, I understand you have a finance background and design elements came after. You know, tell us about your different, and I think many of us have something different and interesting career path. I mean, how you got where you are right now?
Yeah. Well, prior to my finance background, and the reason why I have a finance background is because I have a Chinese background. I'm an immigrant from China. I moved to the US when I was 5 years old with my mom. And being an immigrant from China, the only career paths I ever knew was lawyer, doctor, engineer. And even when I decided to pursue a career in business and finance, my parents are like, what are you going to do with that?
Explain that a little bit. There has to be a direct practical use for the education. Is that what you're saying? Like you just named three educational paths that lead directly to a specific job that pays very well, is very well respected in society. So tell us a little bit about that.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's definitely ingrained in Asian culture. Those are basically the paths that you can take. My mom is a doctor. My dad is a software engineer. And everyone I know in my family has gone down one of those two paths, all of our friends. And so it's very much that is what I just expected. And so when I said I wanted to study business, they were like, what do you mean? Like, what is that? What are you going to do with a business back degree?
That's unbelievable.
It's not like you went home and said, I'm going to study, archaeology, in archaeology or something. You had exactly. In the United States, that'd be a pretty specific, potential path, through a business degree. So that's interesting.
That was a departure for my parents for sure.
I'm sure.
I got my degree in finance and economics, and actually I got a minor in psychology, and they were very confused about what I was going to do.
I'm confused too. But we like it. This is the American way.
Yeah, exactly. What I realized after I had graduated and started working in the financial world is that I was spending my days in my job and I was spending my nights basically hanging out and painting and drawing with my friends who had architectural backgrounds and they were architects. And, one of my friends was actually renovating a house and he was taking off the cabinet doors for all of his kitchens. And we were using those as canvases for paintings. And I just found that I really enjoyed that. And I had never explored anything artistic before, but it was just something really fun. And we would stay up until 2-3 o'clock in the morning painting. Move forward a few years. I moved to the city of Chicago. I was working remotely at a time when nobody was working remotely for the company that I still worked with. And I was not loving the experience. And I was, I think, very inspired by the city of Chicago. It's architecturally incredibly beautiful. And so I started getting curious about art and design. And one of the things that I really thought was missing from my previous career is that you never really saw anything tangible from what the work that you were doing. Like you couldn't touch it. You couldn't walk into it. You couldn't
100%
have somebody else experience it, right? And so
I think that's what drives a lot of people in our industry. This in the simplest form is that you can actually see what you've done at the end of the day.
Right. Exactly. You can see what you've done. And then it's got a life of its own and it starts having relationships on its own with other people. I was doing stuff and it was like ending up in PowerPoint decks. And it just like that wasn't what I wanted to do with my life. And so I made a complete shift pivot. Went back to school, studied interior design, and then joined a hospitality design firm in Chicago shortly after.
That's pretty awesome. And we were going to, ask you about your education, but you kind of already, teased it. But I did want to just point out for the listeners, just the places that you went. You went to North Carolina for undergrad, then Chinese University of Hong Kong. What did you study there?
That was a study abroad. I spent a year in Hong Kong while I was at UNC. Yeah.
Got it. Okay. And then you went to Illinois Institute of Art and then UNC again for a degree in marketing, I believe. I just want to mention that because it's just cool. You kind of went all over the place to all over the world, in fact, and certainly all over the US to just establish the training that you wanted. And what was that like going from all those different places? I mean, you went to UNC twice, but three different places. Was that a cool experience, being in different general areas of the world?
Yeah, it was. It definitely was. And I think it actually all really contributes to where I am today, because design, as you guys know, is incredible. It's both left brain and right brain, right? Like it's a balance of poetry and pragmatism to be able to take an idea and bring it to fruition. Going back to kind of like my minor in psychology, I had no idea how important that would be to the life of a designer and understanding how the decisions you make impact human behavior and impact how somebody is made to feel. And so
you have no idea how having a psychology degree helps you as a developer work with designers.
Right.
That's a joke.
I feel like everyone should have a psychologist.
Really funny, Matt. Really funny. No, I do think, though, I do love the varied background. I had the same sort of the same experience to some degree. It's all full circle at the end of the day, but you get some experience and you have a different educational background and a different upbringing. All the travel I did, I'd been mostly around the world, either backpacking or with my parents by the time I was, 21 years old, 22 years old. I basically, by the time I was right after college, I was gone for a couple of years, lived in different cities around the United States for 6 months or a year at a clip. All that adds up to start to put together the ideas and the fabric of kind of your thought process and your thoughts on design and how to use spaces, and you don't realize that you're accumulating this at the time, but if you're just paying attention at all, the only regret I have, not regret, but the only thing that kind of stinks is for our generation, my generation in particular, I'm 51, is that we didn't have the cell phone with the, so everything's in the memory or if it's not on film. So I don't have as vivid, I go back and see things that I saw when I was younger and it's close to what I remember, but there's a lot of things I probably don't remember that I saw and that I experienced. And that's what's neat about today is you can capture all those moments. I would imagine you do a lot of that with your phone and other things and cameras, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I definitely do. But I also, there's a lot of times when I make myself put my phone away so that totally. I can really be present in that experience, right? Like how many times do you go to a concert and everybody's watching the concert through the screen of their cell phone and they've got it held up and you're like, just be here.
Yeah, it was funny. I went to Coldplay last summer and they forced the crowd to put their phones away and the crowd shamed people who took their phones out for just one song. And just getting people to put their phone away for one song was like this monumental thing. Really cool.
And you're correct. I only say that because the only reason I brought it up on the design side is that architecture is there's so many incredible elements to architecture and I just landscape. And I just love being able to capture those incredible moments these days that I saw so many incredible sunsets from here to Australia and New Zealand and Europe and all these places. And I just don't have,
never mind the videos that you can capture.
Oh yeah. Yeah. Your kids but you are correct, Nina. So, we were talking a little bit about our project. We're talking about what you're doing with Curioso and our project, but as we stated earlier, you're working on one of our most important and impactful projects. And something very near to my heart, the Six Senses Grand Bahama. So tell me, what gets you going about that project? What gets you excited about that?
Gosh, well, one of the things that gets us going is just working with great teams, like world-class teams. And that project certainly has it. But I'd say the main thing is that there are a lot of great hotel brands in the world and great luxury hotel brands. But Six Senses is unique in that I think above anything else, it's really an experience brand. And Six Senses is all about what's going to be memorable and delightful and unexpected and whimsical for your guests, right? Like what's going to take your breath away? Yes. What's going to make you feel completely elated? What's the experience that's going to connect you with the people around you, whether the loved ones that you're traveling with or the local community? What makes you feel connected to the planet? And then at the same time, they want to teach you something. Right? Like they want to teach you about sustainability. They want to teach you about where you are. And so it's this really immersive experience. And then they figure out how to deliver it with luxury.
Yes. That's a great summary. That really sums up what their ethos is and what their goals are. And so you brought that up on Six Senses, which is interesting, but I would imagine that must fit a lot of the key elements that you look for when considering whether to take on a project or not. So what do you consider? How are you looking at things when you consider taking on a project? I think you just kind of backed into it with the description you gave us, but I'd love to hear what are you looking at when you're considering?
Number one, good people. These projects take years, right? Like a long time, probably 3 to 5 years. And
it's a marriage, a short marriage.
Exactly.
A marriage. Yes.
You've got to make sure you want to be in a long-term relationship with the people that you're working with.
Yes,
because it could be really incredible or it could be pretty hellish sometimes if it's not the right team.
Yeah.
And so that's number one. And then the other thing is purpose, right? And it's like, is this project something that is going to be a value add to the community that it's in, to the people that we're working with? And that's also what we get really excited about with this project in the Bahamas, is because it's about restoring the natural landscape. It's about revitalizing the economy. It's about creating a destination. I mean, I don't know if people know, but this is you know, 50 miles off the coast of South Florida, right? Like it's so easily accessible. That's right. And yet it hasn't been as vibrant of a place for many years. And a lot of that has to do with weather conditions and some of the hurricanes that have come through, but it's an incredible place. And I think what you guys are doing and really evolving an entire community there is great. And then, right, like we're working with the ecologists from Biohabitat and, you know, talking about coral reefs and how to, and working with architects like Osen Kundig and 3XN who are, you know, looking at like robotics to be able to create something visually exciting, but also something that can withstand 200 mile an hour hurricane winds. Like there's so much complexity to these projects that it makes it really exciting for us to be a part of that team and working on them.
That's fun. That's a great response too, because that's a lot of the same reasons why we choose to go where we go and what we do. You know, we can work pretty much anywhere we want. We can work on any type of product we want in any location we want within reason. These are choices we make, all of us. So I totally understand what you're saying, and I totally appreciate it. And that's why it's so fun to work with a company like yours and people like you.
Thanks. So quick question. I was on vacation last week and I came back to my desk, and on my desk was the Curioso quarterly Invierno 22. This is quite a quarterly book that you put out. You do this every quarter?
We do.
This is impressive.
You're actually holding the fourth one. So we just finished our first year of them. And,
oh, great.
Yeah. But it's just something that we wanted to do, kind of a self-propelled project to, you know, be able to channel our own creativity in a way that is inclusive of our team, right? And of our whole team. So we share about some of our team members and their passions and what drives them and what they're really interested in. So in the version that you're holding right now, we have a feature of Elizabeth Hutchinson, who's one of our designers. And we talk about the mindful practices and mindfulness and the practices that she embodies every single day that drives a lot of the design that she does. There's a feature on Pioneer Square, which is a community that is being revitalized in many ways, historical community within Seattle. We're working with a development group out of Denver, and they are building a kind of new 24-hour community there. So there's a boutique hotel that our team is working on, but there's also residences, office space, what do they have? They coffee shop, a beerdega, right? Like they're really trying to create the sense of community, which is so needed right now, especially after the last few years in these urban centers where a lot of people have left. This quarterly is our way to kind of like show some of the other things that we're working on or that might be happening within the studio or just things that are interesting to us that we just want to put out there and share with everyone.
I love it. I think it's very cool, very well done, very professional. I'd like to see the
first. I was excited. That came and it was in a really cool envelope. And look at the cover is. Maybe we'll feature the cover on.
Yeah, we should do that. We'll feature it on the podcast.
I thought the cover was so cool.
Can people get this, or is this just like
to get it online?
Special. Yeah, I mean, if you just send us your address or email address through either Instagram or on our website, we'll send you a copy. That cover art is done by one of our graphic designers, this woman named Jenny Medina, who's really talented. But she did a drawing of the Ceiba tree, which
That's what I was going to mention, because that ties into what we were talking about earlier.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. The Ceiba is, there's a lot of Ceiba trees in Merida, Mexico. And then there's also a little turtle down there. And that turtle is actually the pet of one of our studio design leader in Merida. And one of the interesting things that we learned that we didn't know is that turtles actually hibernate in the winter. And so if you have a pet turtle, they actually recommend you put them in the refrigerator.
I did not know that.
Yeah.
I had several.
Pretty sure turtles. If I did that, I would kill the turtle.
I did have turtles when I was little. I'm quite young. I had a few turtles and I don't remember them hibernating. I don't think they made it the full year though. Maybe that was a problem.
They didn't make it to that time of year.
They're just little ones. Did you ever see you know who Kalf and Link are, famous turtles?
I don't. I know the Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles.
Okay, there's that, but Kalf and Link were Rocky's turtles. So I had Kalf and Link. They were very small.
Cool. And
yeah, that's what they Rocky's pets in the first Rocky.
Is that right?
Yes.
That's funny.
Yeah, because Adrian worked at the pet store. Anyway. You remember, Matt?
Yes, yeah, of course. Yes. Of course. I love Rocky. But yeah, I saw the Cibatree story and I was like, you know what? That's amazing. It ties right back into what we were talking about earlier with, you know, tying in the Merida office and the culture into the work that you're doing everywhere. I just think that's beautiful.
It's so, cool. the Curioso book is unbelievable. I loved it when I got it last week or 2 weeks ago and opened it up. Really enjoyed it. And so I'm looking through all this and it made me just want to ask this question because it's such an interesting, unique array of product and projects that you're working on. So what's like your favorite and most interesting? And I know that's a tough question, but I'm going to, if you want to answer that with three quick ones or one longer one, or, cause I know it's tough for me to answer that kind of question too. But what's your favorite thing you've worked on, either working on now or worked on in the past?
Yeah, that is a really hard question to answer because our projects vary so greatly and are so different from each other. And I think that's what makes them exciting. And that's what makes us really excited to work on these projects. So, you know, this resort project that we worked on for 5 years in the Yucatan, that was a really important project to us. One, it helps us to establish a studio in Mexico, but at the same time, we were working for a developer, a Mexican developer who wanted to redefine what luxury means from the lens of his country. And specifically from the Yucatan. And if you've spent any time in like the Cancun region, right? Like you've got tons of hotels, but they're all either American or European brands. Very few of them are Mexican born. And so being able to create that was really, really important for us. And then, you know, the hotel project that I spoke about in Pioneer Square of like revitalizing this historic community. All the projects that I think we really get excited about, like they're driven by purpose. And we also love some of the projects that we have worked in maybe some smaller communities, tertiary, secondary markets. There's a hotel husband and wife team that we work on two hotels for them in New Buffalo, Michigan. And that community, it's basically like, I don't know, maybe like the Cape Cod for Chicago. Sure. But you know, it's a small community, but it's visited by a lot of people in the Midwest. We've worked on a lot of projects in places like El Paso, Texas. We're doing a luxury hotel in Cleveland. And those projects are really exciting for us because we think that design is democratic and that like good design really belongs anywhere. It's not just for the primary markets and primary cities. And so when we can bring something unique or interesting that a community can be proud of. And like you guys, you like wrote the book on this for Baltimore, right? Like,
yeah,
the ability for great design to bring dignity and pride to a place is amazing. And we love being able to do that. And to do that with, you know, passionate people who like really love the places that they're from, like it's just incredibly rewarding.
You know, that's, I think that really is a great summary of your projects you enjoy, but it's incredible because it reminds me so much of another great that I love, who's a very close friend, Patrick Sutton. Patrick does amazing work. We did several, we had him on the podcast actually before.
A year ago.
Yeah, and we did, but we did several projects together, including the Sagamore Pantry. And it's like exactly what you said. You know, great design is great design. And it doesn't matter how big the city is, how small the city is, what the situation going on is. It's noticed, it's deserved. And it really works when done correctly. And I think that the Sagamore Pendry was a great example of that Patrick and I worked on together. He did such a good job telling the story and really finding meaning in everything we did at every turn. So it was, I love what you're saying, and it really rings true. And I know how good you all are at it, but I also know how passionate you are. And I think you put those two things together and you end up with a really great product. As long as you have a great developer with you or a great project manager with you, I know you can end up with a great product.
Yeah, absolutely. The process is so important.
100%. It's actually where the decisions of greatness are made. And also from a practical standpoint, the process is, you know, from a construction standpoint, the process of planning is where you're essentially going to chart your path of whether you're going to be successful from a budgetary and a schedule standpoint or not. And I think both from a design and a construction planning sequencing standpoint, those two things are so important. And I've learned, especially as I've gotten older, rather to, you know, measure twice and cut once and spend that extra time in the conference room or boardroom or whatever it is that you work in the studio and then come out of the box with the product after that. And it always goes better for handling that way, being thorough, being thoughtful and spending the money up front.
Absolutely. And spending the time together, right? Like the project team getting together. Last week, our team was in Grand Bahama with the architects from 3XN and with the brand, with Sarah Bonsall, and just with the landscape architects. And like, you know, everybody's huddled around the table. They've got the sketch pad out, the trace paper.
Did you do a meeting at all on the beach?
I actually was not able to join our team for it, but I know that they definitely took a few meetings.
Those are my favorite.
We have photos.
Yeah, those are my favorite meetings. My favorite meetings are, I must say, I do a little bit of sort of taunting of some of my friends once in a while, and I'll send them a picture and they'll say, well, what are you doing? They want to know why I'm not answering the phone, and I'll snap a photo and send it back to them. So, well, I'm in a meeting, and it'll be like five of us with polo shirts on or something like that, you know, and the women dress similarly with shorts on. We all have shorts on or something like that. No shoes in the water, standing out, pointing back at the beach. And that does feel like cheating a little bit. It doesn't feel like
you working. Really are in a meeting.
Yes, you actually are in a meeting. It just doesn't feel right.
Yeah.
But that's one of the fun parts of working in great places.
I've definitely got some photos of Matt with his feet in the water from our first kick, from our yeah. kickoff. And
that was a bit, it was a meeting though, right? It's legitimately it was, a meeting. Yes. Yes.
No, that's awesome.
Do you have a beer in your hand, Matt?
I hope
still
so.
Counts. Okay.
I feel like I did.
A pina colada with an umbrella. Cool.
Now, that's a good segue to really what I think can be our last question. I know you're really busy and this is awesome and we appreciate your time. This is really just great, but talking about process, for somebody who's at home listening, maybe they're in college or high school or in their 20s, and they're considering getting into the business and doing this work. Take us through. You know, when you decide to take on a project, mm-hmm. you accept that job. Take us from, you know, that point through delivery, and what's kind of your internal process? Really high level, obviously, like a minute or so on it, but. You know, just take us through like what do you do as a leader of your company and what does your team do to deliver? And let's just use Grand Bahama as an example. So like how will you get your team positioned to complete that project and what's that look like?
Absolutely. Well, the first thing is that you really have to as the interior designer, you lead the experience design for the entire project. And so what that means is that you really have to help to establish that North Star for the project, right? Whether it's the concept or the purpose, what is it that we're trying to do? In the case of Grand Bahama, I think Sixth Sense has already did a very good job of getting us having a jumping off point. They had a point of view. And so then we're taking that and layering on top of that.
Yeah, because they already have a strong personality and a strong brand and ethos. Right.
Exactly. But at the same time, what is Sixth Sense's Grand Bahama, right? Like not just Sixth Sense's, but what is it in that particular place? That's so right. In our studio, we practice something called method designing, which really means if you are familiar with method acting, right? Like it's immersing yourself in that mm-hmm. role. So we make sure that our team really understands the place, that they get to spend some time there, that they're really understanding the local community, they're understanding what is what the materiality is of the place, like what do the local craftsmen and women know how to make and do, and then folding that into the project, but always making sure that we're kind of staying true to that North Star that was established early on. And then it's a matter of, you know, creating the great, like the big vision for it, and then layering in all the technical ability and the you know, different trades and the different artisans to help make that a reality, to help implement it. So it's definitely very macro to micro, and there's always a kind of like flaring out and then focusing back in to make sure that we're staying true to course. But you know, these projects take years and thousands of people touch them by the time that they come to fruition. And so establishing that concept and that North Star and like staying true to it is really, it's our responsibility as the design team. And then we're constantly bringing everyone back into that mission.
That's great. And yeah. And how many people typically from your team would work on a project like Grand Bahama, Six Senses Grand Bahama? How many of your teammates are devoted to that, or, you know, roughly?
Yeah. I would say we have three dedicated teams right now. So one on the residences and then two teams on the resort, one for the villas and one for the public areas. That's pretty typical. These teams work in tandem, side by side. But for a project like this, depending on the phase of the project, it's possible that most people in our studio at some one point or another touch it, whether they're focused on maybe the FF&E strategy for the project or the technical drawing set or the sourcing of styling or accessorizing, right? Like all of that. So three dedicated teams, and then a lot of our team members will touch it along the way.
And how many people in your company in total?
We have 35 right now.
Okay, great. So that's a large, you know, component of your company working on these projects. That's exciting. Nina, thank you so much. I mean, I've really enjoyed getting to know you not only today, but also, you know, prepping for this and chatting with you to get ready for the podcast. Your company's awesome. Your work is incredible, and we're thrilled to be working with you. It's a lot of fun. And this podcast was great too. So thanks so much for your time.
Yeah, I just want to say real inspiration. I love the entrepreneurial spirit of opening your business and what you've done. I love the space, and I love the story how you got there is even better. I mean, it's really, really fun. And we are so excited to be in partnership with you in Grand Bahama and can't wait to see the results. It's going to be a really exciting few years. I just can't wait to get there and open this place up.
Yeah, we can't wait either. Thank you guys for having me. It's been really fun to have this conversation with you both.
All right. Thanks a lot. A big thank you to Nina Grondin for joining us today. Really interesting conversation and insights. Really fun. As always, we'd love to hear from the audience. So if you have a suggestion for a guest or a topic for a future show, please reach out on social media on Facebook, Twitter, or LinkedIn at Weller Development. Thanks for listening. I'm Matt Rienzo. He's Mark Weller. Keep building, people. We'll be right back.